Hello and welcome to Real World HR, the podcast which is putting the human back into HR. I'm Louise Kennedy, HR expert, chartered CIPD professional and founder of award-winning HR consultancy Oculus HR. In the Real World HR podcast, we focus on people and business, telling the stories that we've learned from and explain the processes which have supported the solutions. On this episode, I'm joined by employment engagement expert Victoria Bond. Having spent years in senior HR roles at leadership and board level, Victoria developed a passion for employee engagement. Now she builds 10 Space technology, which allows her to capture anonymous employee feedback and data analytics to get the insight you need to drive your HR and people function. In the podcast, we cover everything from culture transformation to gathering and implementing feedback from your team to the best ways to engage and retain employees. Are you ready to step into the real world of HR? So thanks very much for coming along today, Victoria. I'm really kind of looking forward to our conversation to understand more about the employment engagement and get our listeners to understand more about what it is and how it can make a difference in the workplace from a retention point of view, from a performance point of view. But before we start any of that, I'd be really interested just to hear a little bit about you, about what it is that you've done and why you are where you are now. Would be really great.
Thanks very much. So yeah, like you said, my background is kind of senior HR. I've done everything from kind of global HR to was on Manchester Airport leadership team for a while. That was interesting. Startups, scale-ups, mergers and acquisitions, you name it. And then we set up 10 Space. So had the opportunity to really kind of bring in my passion for the work that I've always loved doing in HR, which is around employee engagement, cultures, transformation, improvement, performance management, talent, and marrying that with some technology. So we've built a platform that, like you said, captures anonymous employee feedback. And the work that I now do in 10 Space, helping organisations to capture the right kind of feedback that they need at the right time, in the right way, and helping organisations to kind of use that to drive engagement, performance and retention in their organisations.
Oh, fantastic. So when a company is to get in touch with you about that technology piece that you've got, do you tailor the questions to suit the particular company or is it kind of a one size fits all?
No, it's all bespoke. And I was really passionate about doing that because I really think that no organisation is the same. All organisations, just like individuals, are on their own journeys. And I think when we use something generic, it can be, in terms of survey questions, it can actually be quite disengaging for employees to take part in that because they kind of read it and they think, this doesn't feel like me. I don't know who my leader is versus my line manager. Or, you know, some of it is about language, but some of it is about really getting into the heart of what is it that's going on in this organization? Where are they on their journey? And what is the feedback and the insight that's really going to make a difference at this point in time? So that's why we really bespoke it around every organisation.
And your drive, obviously, you said that you'd worked in some big organisations within big cultures. Does your drive come from somewhere about employment engagement, as in were you within the businesses and you realised that actually the employees within the business weren't particularly engaged? Was that a driver of it? What I suppose, in essence, what led the passion for you to get to where it is that you are to produce technology as you have?
I think there was a point in my career where I realised that everything that we do in HR is actually about building employee engagement. It's about turning up performance in teams, which the heart that, you know, if you peel that back, that's about employee engagement. It's about finding and retaining the best talent. If you peel that back, that's about employee engagement. You know, it's about creating the best employee experiences. That's about employee engagement. So I think everything that I ended up doing in my career always came back to employee engagement being the starting point and the finishing point.
Yeah.
And that's kind of really where my passion grew for it, I guess, because it just felt like that is what HR is, or at least it is for me.
Yeah, that's how it fits in for you. So does it come down to a cultural element of, so we've recently in one of our businesses, we've been talking to with one of our clients around, they keep saying, oh, you know, we've got a fantastic culture, you know, we don't have many people leave, our retention's really good. Then I said, so what is your culture? And they're like, oh, no idea what the culture actually is, you know, to actually verbalise and put it in words. But I had the six senior leaders around the table and we had 2.5 hours with them around what the actual culture is. And they couldn't actually put it into words other than saying, well, it's just a great culture and we've just got people that are engaged and they're here. But culture is a really important element of it to try and verbalise, and because that's what's going to, as you say, really that employee branding part of it, to bring people into the company, to keep people in the company, and to be able to describe it more.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's an important element there when it comes to culture. So I'm not a believer that there's one great culture for everybody. I think different organisations have different types of culture. So if you think about a recruitment business, for example, that's likely to be a very sales-led culture. And the elements that make up a great culture in that organisation are going to be very different to a innovative tech startup, for example, because they're in a different place on their journey. You know, success looks like something different for them, and the leadership is going to be different, and the way that we describe our journey is going to be very different, and our goals and our, you know, it's all very different. So I think you're right. I think it's important to go through that process of kind of defining your culture and really getting to grips with what is it that we're trying to create that will support the success of the goals of the business, and how do we turn up the volume on that?
No, I think that's all completely right, because I think the cultural element of it is ultimately, once you get that part of it the way that the leadership team need it to be, then brings in the employee engagement. It kind of comes on the back of that, doesn't it? Because they, as you say, whatever size business it is, whether they've got, you know, a handful of employees or they've got, you know, 1,000 employees, they need to have the culture there so people can buy into it, which in essence makes an impact upon how engaged people are, how they turn up each day to work. Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly. Because I think, you know, employee engagement for me has always been about your best people bringing their best selves to work and doing their best work when they get there. And that's essentially what it is. And that's the meeting of happiness in terms of employees and them being happy and comfortable in the workplace. But it's also got to be married with the goals of that organisation. Because I often say, you know, if you've got one without the other, it just doesn't work. If you've got really happy employees, but they're not delivering against the goals of the organisation, we're just all sat around on beanbags having a great time eating, you know, pizza on Friday. But, you know, and if we're only focused on the goals of the organisation, but we're not bothered about the well-being and the happiness of employees, actually, we're going to burn out really quickly and it's all going to go up in smoke.
Yeah. So it is the link, I mean, one of the important things, like you've just said there, it is the link between how engaged the people are within the business, how they then perform, and then how they then achieve the goals that the business and the organisation set. So how would you say that link between the engagement and the performance based on culture makes a difference to the business? Kind of what is that link there, and how do you think that works really?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things there. So there's been some kind of research done, and we know that there was one piece of research that was done that said that kind of highly engaged teams outperform under-engaged teams by around 202%. So like it's huge. And I think for me, the link there is about your best people bringing their best selves to work. And if you think about a team of, like drawing a picture in my mind now, if you think about a team of 10, for example, and you have got, you know, 10 of those people working at 70%, you've only got 70% efficiency in your business. You've only got 70% performance in your business. So if we can increase that by through employee engagement, making sure they really are bringing their best selves to work, and we can get that 70 to 80, we can get that 80 to 90, then we're creating a real difference in the organisation. And again, you know, I think there's another stat that always really sticks in my mind because it's absolutely horrifying, that there is only 2 out of 10 employees who are actively engaged in the workplace.
2 out of 10?
2 out of 10. So 2 out of 10 employees or skipping into work going, I'm absolutely here to smash it every single day. And you know what? And it's probably out of a team of 10, it's probably a different 2 every day, you know, depending on what they're bringing into work with them. But if you think about that, so 2 in 10 employees in your organisation are actively engaged in the workplace. So where we can kind of come in terms of performance and gaining some real competitive advantage, if we can create an organisation where 3 in 10 employees or 4 in 10 10 or 5 and 10, if you see what I mean, that kind of incremental difference,
yeah,
that's when we're creating a real competitive advantage, and that's when we can see a real difference in the overall performance of the organisation. But that's also going to translate into the overall performance of individuals as well. You know, if we're doing all the right things to engage them, they're really clear on the goals of the organisation. You know, they've got great leadership, they feel really fulfilled in their roles, and we're looking after them really well, then that's going to generate individual performance that then translates into overall business performance.
Yeah, which all completely fits in together, doesn't it? So one of the things that you were talking about there with regard to engagement, and obviously part of your survey that you use, it would be asking different questions that would lead to understanding whether somebody's engaged within the business. But do you encourage businesses to ask their employees how engaged they are by, I suppose, in essence, like, what would make a difference to them? Because the title engaged is kind of a little bit, you know, well, are you engaged or not, isn't it? But actually, you know, understanding what it is that makes a difference to them that would get them to buy in. So we did a podcast last week with somebody who has got a gym on site and they do a personal trainer on it, and they believe that that's really engaged their employees and their performance is kind of shot away because of it. But things like that are nice to have. A new client of ours has got a counsellor that comes on site, you know, 4 times a week, and they do like 4 hours a day every time they come on. Again, brilliant, but not all business can do that, can they? You know, I mean, the country's made up of a lot of SMEs that obviously don't necessarily have that huge amount of cash to be able to do that. So asking what makes a difference to the employee themselves would make a difference. Would you encourage that for the businesses to be asking the employees that type of thing?
Yeah, 100%. So we've got kind of a huge bank of questions that will get us data. And data is really great because it gives us some level of insight. And if we apply like segmentation into that, for example, so a question that we often ask in engagement surveys is an EMPS question, as we call it. And that question is around, would you recommend this place as a great place to work? And what that does is it gives us kind of a great litmus test, if you like, about general engagement in the organisation. And we can segment that by teams. So we might be looking, right, what's the sales team feel like? What's the customer service team feel like? What's the operations team feel like? And what's the difference between them? So that can get us really great insight. But where often I find the real power is in engagement surveys is when we write in to the surveys very specific open-ended written feedback questions. And we might ask that question, for example, and then we might ask a direct follow-up question to the employees to say, what would make you more likely to recommend this place as a great place to work?
Right, okay.
And because we've been really specific about the question, we tend to get really great quality feedback back. And we're almost answering, because often, so I've done engagement surveys in the past and you ask a billion questions and then everybody sits around and looks at the data and goes, oh, wonder what the employees were thinking when they were thinking about that. And actually, you know, when they were answering that, and actually what you've ended up with is a bit of a waste of time.
Yeah.
So it's one of the reasons, coming back to the bespoke issue, why we try and be really specific in terms of the feedback that we're asking. Because if there's something that's really important to the organisation, we can ask the employees in that moment, what is it that's really important for you here? So, you know, thinking about, you know, we do a lot of performance focused engagement surveys, for example, and they are really about focusing on what are the barriers that the employees might be facing and how can we remove them. So a common question in there, one that particularly springs to mind, is do you have all the training and support that you need to succeed? And often the answer is no. And more often than not, the answer is no. And then it's then built in that written question afterwards to say, what is the training and support that you need? What you've then created is the answer to why you've got the data and the feedback for that question. And you've then got something really, really useful out of that survey, because if you've got a common theme that, you know, we need this training or the finance team particularly need this, you can then go and action that straight away. It becomes a very actionable survey to do.
So when taking that example that you've just given there around the training and support, do you find that a lot of the businesses are unaware of the data that's going to come back, or are they quite, you know, as in they go into the survey situation, they think, yeah, we pretty much know where we're at and we know what the results are going to come back. So if something comes back and somebody in finance says, actually, I haven't had the relevant training, Is that often a surprise to them? Or, I mean, obviously I know different businesses are different ways, but kind of what would be the general thought from you, you know, with the clients that you're dealing with in that circumstance?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm reflecting on that, actually. I think it's usually a bit of a mix. I think in my experience, organisations who have got a really long way to go are the most reluctant to do surveys because they almost want to fix things so that they don't see it written down. Actually, my thought is always, you know what, just do it. Just rip off the plaster. Just find out what you need to know.
Yeah.
We know that asking employees for their opinion and creating an employee voice generates engagement anyway. So you're generating engagement just by doing the process. So just get it done. And you can then use that data and that insight and the feedback that you get as a way of managing the conversation with the employees. So, you know, we've always suspected that, you know, this was a real hot point for us. You told us that, and here's what we're going to go and do about it. I think there are a big number of businesses that are surprised by some of the stuff that they get back. And I think it's often because they're just not listening or they're not asking often enough, or they've got other processes in place that they think are doing the job and they're not. So I'm thinking about performance reviews, for example, you know, those annual performance reviews. And what you're doing there is often going, hi, have you got any training support that you need? Or, you know, how do you feel about how engaged are you? And actually what you're doing is you're putting that employee into a almost like a conflict situation. You're putting them on the spot and then expecting them to be authentic in their answers. And I think often that's where that anonymity point comes in, because we know that 3/4 of employees are more likely to be authentic and honest when they've given that veil of anonymity. So we often uncover things that the organisations weren't expecting because they think they've asked and they haven't.
Right. Just one of the early points that you just made there, when you said obviously some organisations don't want to put a survey out because they don't want to see it to be wrote down. So what type of organisations generally come to you, like at which point does the organisation come to you to say, actually, we're ready for a survey? I know you might be doing work with them beforehand, but is it when they kind of think, actually, we've got quite a lot of this covered? Or is it the point where they think, actually, you know, we know we're in a bad place and actually we need a starting point to start doing the work on? Where would that be? Or what, again, I know it's different in every organisation, but you must have a bit of a running theme through. What would you think?
The point where people are thinking about it tends to be a point of transition. So, for example, we have a lot of new HR people or HR directors who are new into the organisation and just need some data for a feel. We have organisations often who've been through some kind of big event or a transformation. They've done an acquisition or they're doing an acquisition. They've got a piece of investment or something. Or where there is an issue in the organisation, where they've lost a key person, or that, you know, they've seen a particularly high turnover event in a particular team and it's prompted something to go and get some answers or to go and resolve it in a more proactive way.
But it doesn't need to be any of those things either, though, can it? You know, I mean, it could literally just be a case of we're doing what we need to do, but let's find out what the employees feel. It doesn't need to be kind of a pivotal point of change at something. It's just a proactive thing to do. I mean, we deal with a lot of reactive work, obviously kind of doing that, the HR client-facing element of it. We do a lot of reactive, we've got a disciplinary, we've got a grievance. But actually, when it's so nice to be able to move on to the proactive things, which is where you start thinking about kind of what could be done. The other thing I was just thinking there, a few years ago, there was one of our clients who've worked with for years. They had a relatively new person come in to lead the business, and he said, I think we need an employee survey. It's going to come back. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be this. It's going to... And they just did kind of a survey monkey type thing. And it came back, and the results that came back were amazing. Obviously, they'd had obviously good engagement. The retention was good. And I think he bringing it to the board table was kind of completely taken aback, you know, because he'd come in with his the view of all these things need changing, so obviously everybody must be unhappy. But actually, it wasn't a case of that. There'd been a lot of fundamentals that had been put in place over time, and people, you know, the retention was really good, and it made a difference within the business. So you get a bit of both sides, don't you? You get that perception.
it's really, I love working with those businesses as well, because if we have a really engaged team, that's awesome, because it's a different conversation. You know, we're not talking about fixing anything. What we're usually talking about is, one, maintenance of that, and how do we keep that engagement high? How do we protect what's special, and how do we keep checking in with teams to make sure that we're doing that? But the other conversation I often have with highly engaged businesses is, right, how do we use that? So I often think about employee engagement as a bank account. So the more kind of things that you do to engage your teams, the higher, you know, the higher your credit is in your bank. When we go through a change or transformation or something difficult happens in the organization, we make a withdrawal from that bank account. If you're still with me, so you make a withdrawal from the bank account, and the aim of the game is to make sure that we've got enough in that bank account to make sure that we're in credit. So that new leader, for example, who's come in, who has found that they've got a highly engaged team, the conversation I'll be having with them is, fantastic, you are likely to want to do transformation, or you want to push harder or change direction slightly or whatever. You have enough in your engagement bank account in order to do that. And if you, you know, you can safely make some withdrawals out of that to create the transformation and the change that you need without upsetting the team or risk losing the team.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, completely. And I think, well, I think it's a perfect analogy of how to do it, isn't it? You know, if, as you say, if you've got that engaged team, to have, you know, what withdrawals can you make from it and the impact that it makes? Because, yeah, I think that's really useful. The other question I was going to ask around that was, obviously, you get the data that comes back from, I would imagine, certain different areas of it about, you know, engagement or retention or whatever it would be. But it's then, I think you could probably just explain this, what they do with the data. You know, so it's all well and good getting that information back. And I know one of our companies who've got about 150 staff, they do a survey once a year and it comes back in. And then they have set up things like culture groups, and they've set up kind of different forums that have been there. But the actions don't necessarily seem, also from personally from my point of view of what we see, we don't actually see the actions coming back on it year on year. They, you know, they've got those groups that are there, but are they actually actioning the points that have come back from the survey? And we analyse the survey year on year, but and it's pretty steady away. But these things could always be better if they took the results and did something with them. What would you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, there's so much stuff that you can do with that type of data. So one, you know, the first thing I'd be looking at is, are there any retention risks in the business? Can we use that data to understand if we're likely to lose any talent? And if we can, what's the action plan about immediately securing that talent that might be at risk? And we can see that in the data, you know, if we've got a team that's more under-engaged than others, etc. So that's kind of immediate. I think there is then loads of stuff that you can do with an engagement survey data to create your EVP, so your employer branding. What have the employees told you about this organisation that's amazing about it that we can then feed into our employer branding and support our talent recruitment piece? Then there's always going to be action plans, and there's a real knack to action plans. So I always encourage, what are the quick wins? What can we do immediately that's going to help us to do something that we've said that we're going to do? And let's just get that done. And then there's the longer term action plans. But I think the key with action plan is, and what I see a lot is, that a survey is like this event, a big event that happens. We look at the data, it maybe goes to one board meeting, and we all talk about, you know, how great it was or how great it wasn't and what we're going to do about it. And then everyone forgets about it.
Yeah.
And it goes in the drawer until next time. So I think there's, you know, I think, one, the real power comes from keeping it on the agenda.
So I was going to say, it's keeping it on the table, isn't it, for that year, isn't it, as it goes through?
Yeah, exactly. It's coming back and it's saying, here's where we are with this. Here's the data that's supporting the progress that we're making, or, you know, here's the actions. Have you done that action? Have you done that action? And driving some real accountability around it and creating some real visibility so it doesn't get forgotten about.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I really recommend that people don't just do a survey once a year. I think I just don't believe that businesses only change once a year. And a lot of the organisations that we're working with do something quarterly. So much smaller survey, but they're checking in on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So that we've got that drip feed of data coming in to say, right, this is how we're doing and this is how it's feeling on the ground.
On the actual. So, and the quarterly surveys, do you get more engagement? Because obviously one of the things is that you need people to complete the survey, don't you? You know, so then, you know, there needs to be some kind of incentive. Do you think quarterly surveys encourage people to complete the data more often, you know, to go in to do it? Or do people do it because they're more disgruntled with a particular issue? I was just thinking, sidelining this really slightly, but from a parent's point of view, you know, like when the school's going to get Ofsted'd. I know your children are younger than mine. Mine's secondary and in a failing school. And when Ofsted comes in, you get the parent view thing, and people generally just put stuff on there because they're disgruntled. People don't often go on because actually, yeah, everything's fine, so I don't need to put a comment on there. So the response that comes back is always the poor response. Is that something similar that happens within businesses? And does that make a difference because it's quarterly as opposed to annually?
Yeah, so quarterly engagement surveys, we tend to do much smaller surveys. So they're like 5 minutes to complete. So they've not gone on anyone's action, you know, list for that day, to-do list. They're just something that you can do in the moment. And because we will tend to evolve those surveys, we tend to ask in something slightly different for each survey. So we tend to keep it quite interesting. But what we do see is sometimes in some organisations, almost like a bell curve of completion. So what that might look like is a little bit lower completion right at the beginning while we build up trust in the process, while people believe us that it's anonymous, and whilst people believe us that something's actually going to happen as a result of the survey, then, you know, the more that we do, the more actions that we take and the more visibility that we get around the outcomes, we'll see increasing of people going, actually, it is worth me filling in this survey.
Right, because they're seeing the actions happening because of the things that are being put in here.
Yeah, exactly. And we're building up trust in the process, and we're building up trust in the leadership team that something's actually going to happen with the feedback, and we're dissipating some of that cynicism. And then over a really long period of time, we might see it drop off as people feel like they've had their say and things have got better. But the conversation then moves into, look, we're in maintenance mode now. You know, we've done all the things. We're a highly engaged team, and we want to, you know, we want to maintain it, and it's really important. So our communications will often change over time so that we're recognising where we are as an organisation to really try and encourage those employees to complete.
So if you are communicating to people, so the kind of results come out, you obviously talk about kind of board level or senior leadership level, then what information is fed down to the other people within the organisation? Do you kind of give them an overview of the survey? Do you advise them that actually these are the actions that have come from it, and these are quick wins that we're going to do, or these are the things we're going to do? How and what do you communicate to the people that have completed the survey?
Yeah, really good question. And it does depend on each organisation. So some organisations will help them to go into question by question. They want to give the whole lot to employees, not written feedback, because I think that's often quite personal, quite sensitive. But they're happy for people to have question by question. Others just want to communicate kind of, here's your top five questions, here's the bottom five questions, and here's what we're going to focus on. Others just really want to focus on that action plan. And I think it depends where you are and the type of information that you use to sharing with employees and that transparency. My view, I think the more transparent that you can be, the better. But I think you've got to be careful about the way that employees are consuming it. So we often do, for example, like short videos for clients, or just kind of catch employees in the moment, just watch this really short video about, you know, the things that we've learned in this engagement survey, and then giving them access to more detail if they want to go into it, so that somebody who's not interested in the detail isn't opening up a 10-page report, or that we have communicated something back and closed the feedback loop.
Yeah, yeah. I just think that idea of the videos, so, not that I like doing videos, but I just think that idea of the video is such a good thing to do, because actually it only needs to be 5 minutes, doesn't it? A lot can be said in 5 minutes, but it'll give the highlighted bullet points of it, which would then enable the people to think, oh, it has made a difference, I've completed that, and actually there's going to be some actions that come of it. And then they'll see, as you say, they'll see the actions happening, and then the next quarter will fill it out again, isn't it? So there's a real point. Which all of this builds the engagement, doesn't it? Because you're communicating with people, you're speaking to people, you're showing that you're listening to people. So when we talk about engagement, it doesn't always need to be, like I've just mentioned there, like gyms or kind of counsellors. It's about how people want to be perceived and listened to and being given an audience with, actually, with the people who run the business, or leaders or managers within the business as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that employee voice in general is a really, really important thing. And it can be different in different roles. You know, some employees just want to be heard that the breakout room isn't good enough, or, you know, there's a safety issue that they've been raising that nobody's been listening to them for. Others want to talk about their career development or what work-life balance means to them. And it's so important to be given that opportunity for employees to share their voice, whatever that looks like for them, and feeling like they can have an impact and have a, you know, it's really important for employee engagement overall.
Yeah. And I think 2 points that you've raised over different areas there around talking about the individual, you know, like, so some people don't want to really talk about they come to work and they do their job and they go home and they haven't really got any kind of future progression thoughts or don't really want to do anything else. But there's some people that are kind of within a business and they're never given the opportunity to talk about, actually, this is what I want to do, this is the career planning, this is, you know, I would like to do some succession planning, I would like to be trained on that. And as you said before, sometimes those conversations can be difficult because they're one-on-one and people might feel a bit confronted by it. But actually, if someone really does want to progress, it's a great opportunity to be able to open up to people that, you know, if you're doing those one-on-one meetings, that they're counting, that they're valued, and that people can see there's actions that come from it as well, that it's not just another paperwork exercise that needs to be done, or yes, that training information we put in that form we put away, and then nothing's going to happen with it. So there is some real, if you use those one-to-one conversations properly, they can be very well, they can bring the engagement in from the employee as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I often talk about engagement surveys because that's the core of my business, being part of a feedback culture. So, you know, it's almost like the ultimate piece where we're collecting feedback is having that veil of anonymity, but it should never replace those line manager conversations. It should never replace those, you know, in the moment coaching or gathering feedback in different ways, or, you know, asking for feedback at the end of a meeting, for example. It's not about replacing it, it's about supplementing it and giving those employees the ultimate psychological safety to say, you know what, there just wasn't another way that I felt that I could share this with you.
Yeah, that's good. So this is employee branding, something that we talk about quite a lot with our clients, because obviously at the moment recruitment is so difficult to be able to get the right people that go through, that are interested in the business and how to draw them in. And I think a lot of companies don't realise the need to brand themselves to be attractive towards potential employees, you know, people, candidates who would apply to them as well. So this can really help, you know, employment engagement and understanding your culture can really help on what I think is like that step back to kind of the recruitment element of it, because actually you know who you are as a business, you know what it is that you're trying to sell as far as this is who we are, come and work with us, and you're taking a step back to enable that to happen, aren't you? But the employees being engaged makes a big difference on it, because then you know what it is that you're offering.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, we've done a couple of pieces of work with clients recently where we've helped them shape up their EVP. And that's looked like, yeah, list out all your, you know, all your career stuff that you do and all your benefits that you offer and all that. But actually, let us try and get to the heart of what it is that your culture looks like. So there's values and then there's what the culture looks like and, you know, in reality. But also, I think the step that organisations don't do enough is sharing that externally. So, you know, with an engagement survey, for example, we have encouraged people to share their, if they've got great results, go and share that, you know, 90% of your team felt that they would recommend this is a great place to work. Go and put it on social media or put it on your careers page. If you've had a really amazing anonymous comment come through that you're really proud of, go and make a social media tile about it or whatever, and use that to go and push to share externally how great engagement and culture is in your organization, because otherwise people won't know.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point, because actually sometimes people turn up for interview, you know, many times people turn up for interview and they've looked online, they look at the website, but it doesn't really show what the business is, how it feels, what it's like to actually work there, because it's just a standard website which is probably being used to sell whatever the services that they do, as opposed to trying to encourage people to come and work for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Without a doubt. So when we're talking about obviously things like surveys that can take place, obviously would you say there's a particular size of business that should start doing a survey to understand their engagement? Or do you think it's kind of something that everybody can do on some scale of some type, really?
Yeah, so a couple of things there. So there's a piece around anonymity, and our anonymity filter, we call it an ethics filter, is set at 6. So we'd never run a survey for under 6. But we do run small surveys with teams of around 10. We run surveys up to many multiples of thousands as well. I think my view is, once you have got a layer of leadership in your business, and if you're the founder or the owner, for example, and you are then devolving responsibility for engagement of your teams to somebody else, I think you need to be checking. So it does kind of kick in around 10, I would say. And, you know, we won't get loads of segmentation out of a survey of 10, but you will get a general feel for engagement, and you'll get a general feel for, you know, whatever survey questions we've built in as a group. And I think that is the tipping point. It's when you as an owner of a founder aren't directly responsible for a team anymore. I think that's when you need to start checking in.
Yeah. So from a value point of view, obviously, you know, we're talking about engagement there, and engagement can come in so many different forms that we've mentioned. And the other benefit that we've talked about is understanding the culture. The more you understand the culture and the engagement, the higher performing the teams could be within there as well. But also another important point that we've probably just skimmed over really is the retention, isn't it? So if people are engaged and they understand the culture and they're performing well within the business and they've got future plans if they need them, the retention then makes a massive difference, and you can retain your staff or your employees, the preferred of all, and retain your employees for longer. Would you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. And, you know, as I kind of intimated earlier, we can see in the data if there's a particular team that's at risk of losing somebody. And I often think about the impact of somebody resigning. So, you know, yes, you've got a resignation on your desk and we're all, you know, we're sad about it. But if you peel that back, there's probably been 3 months, say, where they were underengaged and not delivering at their best, and maybe they were only bringing 60% of themselves to work. Then they decide that they're going to leave, and maybe it's taking them a month, 2 months, 3 months to find a job, and you're definitely not going to get the best out of them at that point. Then you've got the resignation on your desk and you're like, oh no, you know, I've got some cost of recruitment, or I'm going to lose somebody that I really didn't want to lose. So there's a direct cost that hits at that point, but you've already lost so much kind of productivity with an under-engaged person before that point. Then maybe they're serving their notice. Well, you're definitely not going to get the best out of them at that point. Say it's 1 month, say it's 3 months, whatever. Then if you're lucky enough to be able to replace that role, you paid your recruitment fee, or you've had your downtime, or whatever that direct cost is to replacing that person, you've then got maybe, what, 3 months getting somebody up to speed? I'm, you know, I'm totally summarising here, but 3 months of getting somebody up to speed where they're not up to, you know, their best either. With the best all in the world, you're looking at maybe 12 months of underperformance and underengagement for a role where you're just really not getting the best out of them if you've got a disengaged person in that role.
Yeah. And actually, that is the reality. You know, when people put these costs, you know, different surveys put a cost, it'll cost you like £20,000 if someone leaves. And people think, well, it doesn't really, does it? Because obviously, but actually, when you break it down in that type of way, that they're disengaged in the first place, then they're starting to look, and they don't look instantly, do they? You know, once you break it down into that type of mindset, how relevant is that? Because actually, if you've got someone who is disengaged, then the process goes through, as you say, finding a job, then they do the notice period and things. It's a long process, and getting somebody to be at the right point coming in to kind of take over the role again. So, yeah, you can kind of really understand why there is such a financial cost, because it's not just the money that's being paid out, but actually, you know, there's all the other steps that have come forward to there as well. Good point, that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think organisations are often focused on their retention figures and trying to bring down the retention figures. And actually, that's almost like a lag measure. It's happened already. You know, actually, where we need to be focusing on is employee engagement. That's the lead measure, because we know that if we increase engagement, we increase retention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very well put together. I like that. Very well put. But it is the reality, and that's the point of these podcasts. You know, you want the listeners to kind of have those little light bulb moments of, yes, actually, if we do this and did that, then this would impact upon that. So I think really important points that come through. So obviously you've given us so much advice that's gone through there, but just to kind of round off, what would be the actionable advice? So next steps that a listener could put in place to put in practice within their own business or as a manager or as an employee? What do you think would be a really good thing from a business owner and manager point of view that they could do to talk about engagement or do something, take the first steps in engagement?
Yeah, I think go and find the data first. So the data might look like, it might look like retention figures, it might look like sickness figures. Go and pull together some trends from that perspective and just see if you can kind of get a feel for how things are in your organization. 100% I would recommend you do some kind of engagement survey to really kind of create that employee voice, and then go and start that process in your organization of capturing employee feedback data and then marrying that data up. But I think the real, and we've not really talked about this, the real impact, the real thing that we find that makes a difference in terms of a success of an engagement survey or what happens next is engaging leaders. So I would not recommend that you go out and just do a survey and don't engage your leaders. You don't tell them it's coming. You don't tell them that you need their support with it. You know, I think go and talk to your leaders about how important employee engagement is and how it's really important that we get a grip on it and how great employee engagement can make a huge difference in your organization. And then go and do something about it. And then you can go and measure it and capture that employee feedback with that support of the leaders in place.
Yeah, which is, again, a really valid point. And obviously your leaders need to be on board so they can communicate in the business, and making sure that the consistency of the information that's coming through and the communication is kind of nailed on from a business perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And actually, we've seen a real trend recently for middle managers being disengaged. And it's just so, it's a real issue in organizations, because if you think about those middle managers, they're the ones who are responsible for scaling engagement across a large number of teams. So as much as we want to engage everybody in the organization, actually, if you do nothing else, go and do an engagement survey with your leaders, your people leaders, and make sure that they are engaged.
Good starting point for it.
You want to start small, and a whole employee survey feels a bit too big. Go and ask your leaders, because they'll give you an idea of, actually, do I have the leaders engaged enough in order to help them scale engagement through the rest of my organisation?
Right, okay. Again, really valid points there. I think just making sure that everybody's on board with what's taking place, and, as you say, each level through the business needs to be engaged at each point, doesn't it, to be able to take it to the next level within the business as well. So, where can listeners find out more about you? Because obviously, you know, you've given us some loads of advice that's there. But if you want to give us your LinkedIn or also your website and things as well, if you give us some information about where we can find a little bit more.
Thank you very much. So you can always find me on LinkedIn and a straightforward search for Victoria Bond. And I am all over LinkedIn, sadly. It's part of the job. And then you can find us on our website, which is www.tenspace.co.uk. And if you want to some more podcast stuff, there's a podcast that I run as well. So yeah, there's loads of different ways that you can find us.
Yeah. And what's your podcast called?
Oh, if you don't mind promoing, it's called HR Director's Cut, and it's listeners write us in letters, and there's a couple of us who answer the letters in a hopefully amusing way, but also kind of addressing some of those tricky HR issues that we often come across.
Thank you so much for obviously coming along today, Victoria. So thank you for listening to the Real World HR podcast, and thank you so much to Victoria for joining me. Head to the show notes to connect with Victoria and find out more about the topics that we've covered today. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes, and please do leave us a rating and review. Real World HR, putting the human back into HR.